Last time I dove off the deep end, and I did this big introduction into several topics: kinetics, thermodynamics, equilibrium, each of which is its own chapter, each of which maybe more than one chapter. It's big, heavy stuff, and I was trying to make all these connections. And I know that because today the exam is there, you probably haven't really read a lot about what I talked about last time. So I want to just take about 5 minutes, maybe, and give us some context of what happened last time, and to give you section numbers to look at, because I'm bouncing around for sure. And so the first diagram we did is in section 16.5, and that is what I called a reaction coordinate diagram. Let me draw one quickly, a simple one, and label the bits on this diagram that we care about. If I don't do it very fully, it's only because you do have the other notes posted, so this is the short review, not the full coverage of the topic again. Oh, no. It was an epic fail. There we go. So this is energy on the y-axis, something called the reaction coordinate, which is the most likely pathway. And off to the side here, let me just make a commentary. A reaction coordinate diagram represents the energy a single set of reagents has as they are converted.
Does that say 10.5 or 16.5?
16.5. One moment, I'll fix it. Into products. So, in other words, suppose you had water forming. The smallest version of water reacting or being formed would be two molecules of hydrogen, one molecule of oxygen to form two molecules of water. Now, that's not what this diagram represents. I'm just saying that's what it means by a single set of reagents. So now, what were some of the things that I labeled on here previously? Well, we have the reactants and products. We have the transition state, which is the highest energy point that it goes through as bonds are breaking before bonds fully get formed. There is the amount of energy it takes to get up to that point, which affects how fast the reaction occurs. And then there is the amount of energy that's released by the reaction, which is more related to the current chapter, because that's more related to how likely the reaction is going to occur. Where we're focusing is something that's in section 20.4, which is what I call the reaction progress diagram. And there's two examples of this diagram I would like to draw. Yeah. Wow, it does what I tell it, doesn't it? Good enough. All right. This diagram... Oh, let me give you the purpose of the diagram first, while I still have room. A reaction progress diagram represents the energy of a system, which means multiple reagents. Multiple sets of reagents. Billions. A reaction progress diagram represents the energy of a system as it is converted from 100% reactants to 100% products. So it's like an averaging, you could say. And that doesn't mean, then, that all the reactants are necessarily going to go to products. That's another difference between the two types of diagrams. One shows what a set of molecules would do if it reacts. And now this one I'm working on says you got billions of molecules. Will they even react, for example? And so there are two possibilities that, especially if you, or I'm trying to keep the story as simple as I can, so I'm stopping myself there. When the products are lower in energy than reactants, it makes sense that the reaction is going to roll downhill. And at that lowest point of the diagram, that's what we refer to as equilibrium, which I'm putting my little feet on the K's there because later on we have a lowercase k that comes up in equilibrium, because chemistry wouldn't be fun unless you made it confusing. Now there's a drop in energy here. It's negative, that's why I say delta G less than zero. Now notice, the fact that it's losing energy is tied to the fact that the equilibrium constant is big. Now, one second here, is this cutting off some of the screen? No, okay. So remember that qualitatively, that K is equal to products over reactants. And remember, more generally, it's concentrations of products raised to their stoichiometric coefficients multiplied together, divided by the reactants raised to their stoichiometric coefficients multiplied together. So the point of saying that is the diagram on the left, K is going to be greater than 1. Now, the diagram on the right is going to be very similar. It just shows you the situation if the energetic situation was reversed. In this case, since the reactants are lower in energy than the products aren't likely to form, literally like trying to roll a ball uphill. So the position of equilibrium lies much closer to the reactants. Now, there's an equation I wrote down last time. I haven't even put it up yet. And in fact, I'm not going to put it up. I would like to keep this a little more conceptual until we catch up with the math. So the most important thing is, this is uphill in energy. So delta G, because we don't know what this is what's known as free energy. Think of it like potential energy. Because that's really what it is. Because next quarter in 1C, where do you come up with those references? My goodness. So potential energy. Think batteries, voltage. You're going to come up with an equation in 1C where you directly relate free energy and voltage. So potential energy is a good way to think about it. So this is kind of what I had introduced last lecture. I'm only going to add one thing to all of this, which is known as Q. And I'll write down on the next page what Q is. Q represents where is the reaction at that moment. It is mathematically identical to K in that it's still products over reactants. Products raised to their blah, 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 divided by reactants raised to the blah, 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 blah. It's all of that. The only difference between the two is K is only calculated at equilibrium, a certain set of concentrations that it will reach. Q can be anywhere the reaction happens to be. So the diagram on the left, Q could be on the right of the diagram. I just happened to put it on the left because it shows the more likely situation that the higher energy reactants, it's like it's going to roll downhill. And Q, in this case, is less than K. So it wants to catch up to K quantitatively, that measure of reactants and products. Over on the right-hand side, I've shown the more likely situation there, that you're going to have too many too many products. That means your products over reactants is going to be too big. Your Q is going to be too big. And that's why the reaction is going to roll back downhill to the left. Now, by the end of the quarter, we will quantify all of that. But right now, we're just working on the easier pieces of it. Now, go ahead and please get your screenshots. Okay. Now let's move on to an example, finally. Let's put some of this in practice. And no, I need to write down some of the terminology or some of the concepts for the previous page first. So what's the difference between Q and K? Q is the equilibrium constant. And it is only calculated.
You put K.
Oh, I said Q, didn't I? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, it's K, right?
I meant K. I'm just. Okay. I'm trying to get everything in, and I'm in too much of a rush.
Yeah, I understand.
Oh, someone. Oh, I forgot to put it in here. Thank you for catching that. No, on the other side here. No, K is less than one. Because K is the reaction's unfavorable. So that means more reactants than products. So big denominator, small numerator, small value of K. So why don't you take your screenshots again? Because I forgot that K part. Thank you. Okay. So now I was saying K. The equilibrium constant is only calculated at equilibrium. Q is something known as the reaction quotient. And it represents the progress of the reaction at that moment. And it may or may not be at equilibrium. And so let me put in more definitively what I was saying about reaction direction. When Q is less than K, remember, let me put off to the side here, that Q or K effectively are products over reactants. So when Q is less than K, there are too many reactants. Or, the other way to think of it, is too few products. Small products, small top of the fraction. Lots of reactants, big bottom of the fraction. So that makes Q small, which in this example making it smaller than K. So when that happens, there are too many reactants or too few products, so the reaction moves forward. Which means more products, less reactants. And the complete opposite is true. When Q is greater than K, there are too many products. The top part of the fraction is too big. Or, again, other logic, too few reactants. So what do? So the reaction moves backwards. Which means it makes more reactants, less products.
Wait, so for the first graph, Q would never be on the right of K?
No, it can. It can. And that's I know I'm going to confuse people, but I had to make a decision what to show and how. So Q can be anywhere along that graph we want it to be. I just happen to show the more likely situation that you're going to start with more reactants, and it's going to go to the right. If it happens to be too far to the right, it will fall back left. So maybe I should just put a star here. And say, Q can be anywhere. Alpha quadrant or gamma quadrant, either one. All right, now, there's one other statement I can make. Q is the slope of the line at that point, or are we doing derivatives? No. But when we hit kinetics, I'll scare people with them a little bit. No, Q does not represent the slope. It represents the percentage of reactants and products. So that's why I call it the reaction progress diagram. Now, that's conceptual. Q is actually this mathematical expression, but the mathematical expression itself changes. And I'm trying to avoid that whole discussion until we got some of these concepts. I do this totally backwards from the way that the book does it, in a sense, because I'm going after the concepts and then going after the math and then going after some of the details. Your book, like many chemists, approaches it from the opposite direction. Work on the math first while everybody wonders, what the hell is a constant? What is equilibrium? And then eventually we get to what equilibrium is. That doesn't make sense to me. So that's why all this is a bit bass-ackwards. So there's one more statement to make, which is that when Q equals K, the reaction is in equilibrium. So screenshots here, and then let's go to our first example. All right. Nitrogen gas can burn in oxygen gas to form nitrogen monoxide, which is also a gas. And it turns out that the equilibrium constant for this process, based on concentration, is equal to 0.10 at 2,000 degrees Celsius. The question is going to be this. In a 5-liter container, contains 0.40 moles nitrogen, 0.40 moles oxygen, and 0.80 moles nitrogen monoxide. The question is this. Is the reaction at equilibrium? If not, which way will the reaction go? So that's the problem. Let me make a few statements before we even work the problem. So there are two types of Kc, or K constants, that we can calculate technically. So Kc is based on equilibrium. What am I saying? Based on concentration. Molarity, in other words. Kp is based on partial pressure. We will later on worry about how to deal with Kp versus Kc. Right now, we're only going to stick to Kc. Because if we have moles and we have liters, we have moles per liter, which means we have concentration. Here's another statement that you'll learn later on why it's true. The only factor that can change K is a chain, or change, let's make it simpler. The only factor that can change Kc is a change in temperature. And you might say, well, what happens if you just add more products? Well, that doesn't change K. That doesn't change the balance point. That might change where you are relative to the balance point when you start messing with reactants and products. It doesn't change where they'll end up. The only thing that will move the destination is temperature, because temperature changes the relative energy of the reactants and products. So that's getting off the deep end again. So let's go back to the problem. The problem is this. We have this reaction, reversible. It has an equilibrium constant, and it's asking us something specific about it. So back to the problem. Let's translate the problem into math. It says, is the reaction at equilibrium? Is Q equal to K? If not, which way the reaction will go? If Q is not equal to K, is Q less than K, or is Q greater than K? If Q is less than K, the reaction is going to go forward because we don't have enough products. If Q is greater than K, the reaction's gone too far already, and it's going to go backwards. So the blue above and below is the translation back and forth between English and math. Okay, so how do we figure out what Q is supposed to be, or what K actually is supposed to be? Well, we know what K is. K is equal to 0.10, because it tells us that. And what can we say generally about this reaction based on the value of K? It's less than one. That's right. So that means that there are going to be more reactants than products at equilibrium. That's exactly right. K is less than one. So there will be more reactants than products at equilibrium. The other terminology that's sometimes used is that it's reactant favored. Okay, now what about Q? Well, Q is equal to the concentration of NO2 squared divided by the concentration of nitrogen and the concentration of oxygen. How did I get that? Well, look at the chemical reaction up above. You have ones for the stoichiometry constants for nitrogen and oxygen. You have a two for nitrogen monoxide. So that's why nitrogen monoxide is squared, and then the others don't have any powers to them. So we can calculate this, but first we got to come up with what the concentrations are. So let's do that on the next page where we have a little more room. So go ahead and take your screenshots of this. And here we go. So, if you look on the values I gave on the previous page, there are 0.40 moles of nitrogen gas in a 5-liter container, and let's say 5.0, just so we can keep the same number of sig figs. So that gives us 0.080 molar for nitrogen. That's the same thing as the concentration of oxygen, because it's the same number of moles. The only one that's a different number of moles is nitrogen monoxide. It's 0.80 moles nitrogen divided by 5.0 liters, which would be 0.016 molar. Now here's why these values were chosen, if I can slip back to the original problem. It says you got 0.4 moles O2, 0.4 moles N2, 0.80 moles nitrogen monoxide. So the uninitiated chemistry student might look at that and say, oh, yeah, double the amount of NO. So yeah, it must be in equilibrium because it matches the stoichiometric equation. That is not what determines equilibrium. Because what if there's a huge difference in which set of things is lower energy, reactants or products? It's not going to be based on stoichiometry necessarily at all. So that's why we have to calculate these concentrations, and then we can throw them in the expression for Q. So Q, again, is equal to nitrogen monoxide squared over nitrogen times oxygen. So that's going to be equal to 0.16 squared divided by 0.080 times 0.080. Now, we could use a calculator, or we could use a little bit of logic. Because if we rewrite this, this is 0.16 squared divided by 0.080 squared, which is equal to 2 squared, which is equal to 4, which is greater than K. The other way to say it is that Q is greater than K, which means what? The reaction is not at equilibrium. Oh, so actually, let me state this more step by step. First, Q is not equal to K. We can see that. We calculated Q and it ended up 4, and K was given to us. So the reaction is not at equilibrium. The next statement to make is that Q is greater than K, so the reaction will go in reverse. So at least we've had some kind of quantitative example involving equilibrium. There's another type of problem that I'd like to now start, and we may just barely finish in time. Let's see. Ian has a question.
Both nitrogen and nitrogen oxide is 5 liters, right? That's 5 liters?
Yeah.
5.0?
Right. Because everything's in the same container.
Okay. Wait, is that total?
Yes, 5 liters.
Okay, got it.
Elise.
Can I?
Yes, please.
Is K value always given, or sometimes you have to calculate it? Because in the previous session, you show us the formula of K also.
So sometimes it's given, sometimes you have to calculate it. Depends on the problem.
And the way is similar to Q also? Is it the same formula? Is it using the same formula with Q?
So you will see soon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There are a lot of these kinds of mathematical examples I'm going to show you to help you understand how we use it, where it comes from, and all that. Okay. So this next problem is going to be one where...
Professor?
Yes.
So, sorry, quick question. For the second one, the molarity of NO when it's the 0.8 moles, is this supposed to be NO or N2?
Oh, gosh, NO. Thank you. One part of the brain not looking at what the other's doing. There. Okay. So here's another similar problem. This one... We have hydrogen gas. There we go. We have hydrogen gas. Reacts with iodine. Vapor. And wherever I got this example from didn't happen to give the temperature. And it says, in this case, that Kc is equal to 8.36 times 10 to negative 5. No, 10 to the negative 2. So it's a lot like the previous example.
Professor?
Yeah.
Hello? Is 0.08 also equal to O2 as well as N2?
Yes.
Up there. Okay, thank you.
All right. So here, Kc, the Kc of the previous problem was 0.1. This is just a little bit less than 0.1, so it's still reactant favored. And in this case, it says that you have 0.18 moles of hydrogen. 1.8 moles hydrogen, 1.8 moles iodine, and 0.60 moles of the product hydrogen iodide. And these are all in a 1.5 liter container. Since you know we're going to need to do concentrations, let's go ahead and do them. So concentration of hydrogen is going to be 1.8 moles over 1.5 liters, which is 1.2. Iodine, I'll write it out explicitly this time. It's 1.8 over 1.5, which is going to give us 1.2 as well. And then the hydrogen iodide is 0.60 over 1.5, which is going to give us 0.40. All right, Let's calculate Q. It's equal to HI squared over H squared, H2 times I2. So that's going to be 0.4 squared over 1.2 times 1.2, which turns out to be 1/9. Well, 1/9, 0.1-ish, is more than 0.08, which is the equilibrium constant. So that again means Q is greater than K. So what would be the concentrations that you would get at equilibrium? Well, let's look at that. Take your screenshots. So the question is, what will the concentrations be? At equilibrium. Well, what things do we have? We have the reactants, hydrogen and iodine, and then hydrogen iodide. We know what their initial concentrations are going to be. We just calculated as 1.2, 1.2, and 0.40. Now, how much is the concentration going to change? Well, got to be a little careful. Look at the stoichiometry. There's a 1 in front of the H, a 1 in front of the iodine, and a 2 in front of the HI. So let's say that hydrogen goes up by a value of X. It's got the same stoichiometric coefficient as iodine, so it will also go up by X. But then hydrogen iodide has got a 2 in front of it. And if this reaction is going in reverse, that means we're getting rid of products. So there's going to be a negative 2x there. So what will we end up at the end or at equilibrium? Then we'll end up with the values of 1.2 plus x, 1.2 plus x, and then 0.40 minus 2x as our concentration of products. So now, what do we do? Well, what's the equilibrium expression? It's equal to HI squared times H2 times I2. Well, we substitute. We get 0.40 minus 2x, and that's squared. Then we get 1.2 plus x times 1.2 plus x. And that is equal to 8.36 times 10 to the negative 2. So, does that mean we have to solve a quadratic? Well, no, because let's use a little logic here. If we rewrite this, we'll get 0.40 minus 2x squared over 1.2 plus x squared is equal to 8.36 times 10 to negative 2. Now we just take the square root of both sides of the equation. We're going to get 0.40 minus 2x over 1.2 plus x is equal to the square root of 8.36 times 10 negative 2. Because I'm not going to finish solving the problem. Well, actually, no, we have the time, don't we? Yes, we do. So, hold on. Calculator. I managed to get there. Okay, 8.36 to the negative 2 power, square rooted, gives us 0.289. But x has got to be a positive value, because that's the way we set up our table. So we're only going to take the positive number. And I'll just put in here, x must be positive, because of the way we set the problem up. So now we multiply out. We get 0.40 minus 2x is equal to 0.289 times 1.2. I'll worry about sig figs later. That gives me 0.3468 plus 0.289x. So I put similar things on opposite sides of the equation. So I'm going to subtract 0.3468 from both sides of the equation, and that's going to give me 0.0532 on the left-hand side. I'll add 2x to both sides of the equation, so that gives me 2.289x, and so that I get x is equal to 0.0232, being sloppy with sig figs. So I was asking, well, when will x be negative if the reaction goes the opposite way you think it's going to? That's why we figured out which way the reaction is going to go first, and we created our x values based on that. So if we thought the reaction was going to go forward, we would have said minus x plus 2x up above. But that's not what happened. We went in reverse. But that's when you're going to get an x that's unexpectedly negative. So all that's left to go in to do is to substitute. So that means that the H2 concentration at equilibrium is going to be 1.2 plus this value, so 1.2232. Iodine is going to be the same, 1.2232. And then hydrogen iodide is going to be 0.4 minus double that, which I'm not going to try to do that in my head, given all the little flubs I've made today. And so that gives me a value of 0.3536, if all of these are in molar.